Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
WGR.
It's hard to find an expert more dedicated than John Clayton.
Sports Radio 550.
He's the consummate pro.
It's John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
With Chopin the Bulldog.
John Clayton is being brought to you by Northwest Bank, increasing the value of you. And by Goya. If it's Goya, it has to be good.
Our pleasure, as always, to bring on John Clayton, joining us on the West Her Hotline. John, I'm with Sal Capaccio today. Sal, I think you know. I mean, you guys have interacted before. Bill's sideline reporter.
Hello,
John,
Sal.
John, well, among his jobs, Seahawks sideline reporter. Yeah. So you guys can talk about.
We're sideline brethren, John. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, that's right. I get the most unique job, though, because I do the opponent's team sidelines. Jen Mueller does the sidelines for the Seahawks, and of course, I do the opposing teams because, one, it keeps me neutral, which I think is important as a reporter, and then number two, it gets me more knowledge of the other team that I can start doing things for the Washington Post and other entities.
Very good, but that's good thinking.
I feel weird, John, going over to the other team's sideline, even though, like, last week, for example, Saquon Barkley went out, and there was nothing wrong with him, but It looked like he was speaking with a trainer, and I thought to myself, I should go over there and check that out. But I'm on the Bills sideline, on the Bills sideline reporter, and I figure they're probably not going to want me hanging around the back of their bench at all, so I kind of feel like I'm in a weird spot there.
I can understand that. I'll give you an example. In the preseason finale against Oakland, it just started pouring rain. And the security guards, it was a home game in Seattle, and the security guards wanted to take care of me, and they're going to give me a little cover-up thing. But unfortunately, it was all Seahawk colors. And I said, I can't stand here on the sideline, you know, wearing Seahawk gear and trying to report on a neutral basis. So, yeah, I can understand that because you have to watch it. And, you know, certain teams don't get it. But I guess what helps me is, you know, having 22 years at ESPN and being just to every city and every game and all that stuff, you know, that kind of gives me the chance. And then the other thing is, you know, one of the keys to being a sideline reporter is that you share with all the other sideline reporters. And so, you know, I'm sharing with whoever's there for the network. I'm sharing with the people. It would be on the Bills. I'll be sharing with you anything I know, because, you know, if you're doing the opposing teams, you're going to get a little bit less time on the air, but more time to share and gather more information.
Yeah. Sal and I don't know if we've ever talked about this exactly, but I'm also very weird about the logo. Yeah. Like, Bills close at work day. Like, I feel like I can't do it. And, I mean, I'm not in any sort of official capacity in that way. Right. I'm probably way too uptight about it. Here I am sitting with Sal, John, and, like, we've got a Bills trip we're giving away. I'm wearing a Borussia Dortmund soccer jacket. Like, I just cannot. If I go out of town, I'll wear the logo. Because then I want to be like, oh, Buffalo, the guy who called in and said he was at Disney World.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, like, for example, my first year of covering the league was 1972, and I was in high school covering for the St. Mary's Daily Press. And so the Immaculate Reception happens, and we're in Three Rivers Stadium. I'm in the auxiliary press box, and so Franco literally was running right toward me. And, you know, in the auxiliary press box, you got, reporters who are more fans than reporters, right? So they're all up cheering and stuff like that. I had one of the head PR people in the league standing right behind me, and the first thing that I did is turn to him and I says, hey, is there any way we can see a replay? That's an illegal catch. So I've been neutral since 1972. I mean, here it is, the biggest moment in Steeler history, and I'm calling an illegal catch, which it was.
Yeah, that's I respect this.
That's,
I
mean, that's awesome.
This is kind of how I am too. All right, let's speed it up. Almost 50 years. How about the Bills at 2-0, John? How impressed are you? And I think I may have asked you that last week, even if we did. What do you think after two games?
I wouldn't say impressed. I think, you know, you take advantage of the winnable games, and certainly, you know, that was a winnable game. The Giants are terrible. And so, and you saw the Jets absolutely collapse. And so, you know, it's almost like trying to judge, not, I mean, it's a little easier to judge Baltimore. But again, I go back to the topic that I brought up last week. I mean, this all looks to me like 2 years ago when, you know, you don't have more than four playoff teams and everything is wide open. And if you take care of the winning the winnable games, just like the Bills are doing, and that's where I think, you know, Sean McDermott now deserves a lot of credit because he wins the winnable games. And that was a winnable game because, I mean, the Giants had nothing at wide receiver. They have no pass rush. You know, they're not a very good team. And Eli Manning played bad enough to be benched. So, you know, again, am I impressed? Well, not really. But what I am saying is that, you know, Sean McDermott is a coach that can take these winnable games and put the team in a very good position. That I can be impressed with.
The Jet game will all this year, as long as this year is alive, the Jet game will just look so big. I mean, I thought it then, and I think I will think it all season. Sal, right? Like, if the Jets make a field goal or pull out the game, like they make one play at the end, and we're 1-1, we're like, okay. You know, I think a lot of people would be less, I don't know, focused on the upside, the ceiling for this Bills team, but that isn't what happened, and that's to their credit, you know, at least in part. And so 2-0 with the Bengals in, you can feel like a lot is possible here.
I think what happened, John, is when the schedule came out, people thought there was at least early opportunity for the Bills to get a couple of wins. Whether that's the Jets, Giants, or Bengals, however order that went in, there was opportunity to get to 2-1. But when they won that first one, I think that got people to, okay, well, now there's no excuse to not beat the Giants, and now there's certainly no excuse to not beat the Bengals, and the expectations have clearly risen around this team.
Yeah, but you got to worry a little bit about the Bengals because I saw them in the opener against Seattle, and even though they laid an egg against San Francisco, they're a little bit better than I anticipated. I mean, the things that look a little bit better is that, you know, Zach Taylor and Andy Dalton look like a winning combination. The coach really puts the quarterback in a good position to win. But the problem that they have is their offensive line's terrible. So that can benefit the Bills because, you know, remember, Zona Williams, the first round picks out for the season. Cordy Glenn, the former Bill, he's got concussion protocol. The first round center they drafted last year is so hurt that he's now a backup. So, and it got, I mean, it's so bad that Andre Smith, the 2009 first-round right tackle from the Bengals, he's now playing left tackle for the second game in his life. And so it all collapsed because they went against Dee Ford and Nick Bosa. And so that's what collapsed the offense. You know, and defensively, they got a pretty good defensive line. They're not great. But, you know, they're a little bit more formidable. But when you think about, you know, going back to that Jet game, that loss is going to put them on a spiral where I think that they're going to be 1-5 and 0-6 and pretty much, you know, open everything up and give the Bills a chance to sweep against Miami and a chance to sweep against the Jets. Because look what's going on with the Jets. Sam Darnold has mono, okay? They have an opening schedule where the only playoff team in the first from last year in the first six games they lost to, which is Cleveland, and that's not a bad team at 7-9. You know, they lose Quincy Enunwa, their best receiver. You know, they've got C.J. Mosley out probably for two games with a groin injury, and it's just a mess right now.
John Clayton with us, Mike Shope and Sal Capaccio, who's in for Bulldog today on WGR. John, there is a ton of news, and a lot of it's at quarterback. You mentioned Darnold, and then upstaged in the same stadium is the Eli Manning news. Are you surprised by that? I mean, we've all just kind of been talking about it being a matter of time, and then the draft pick just accelerates that. Did you think maybe it would be later on when they would do this, or no?
I thought it was going to be later on. I mean, when you saw Daniel Jones play in the preseason, then he played well enough that you knew there was going to be a short leash. I didn't think it was going to be this short because, you know, when you look at it, it's like, okay, you know, Eli, I think, what, averaged 4.8 yards an attempt in the game Sunday. That's horrible. But who's he throwing to? Remember, this is a team that traded away Odell Beckham Jr., Golden Tate's on suspension. You know, Sterling Shepard's been hurt. I mean, he has nobody. I mean, when you start to talk about Benny Fowler being among your top two wide receivers, that's got to be scary. And so then you look at, you know, the defense. I mean, you know, it's so bad that Janoris Jenkins, old Jackrabbit, called everybody out and says, hey, I can't cover guys for 10 seconds. We need a pass rush. Well, they traded away their best pass rusher, Olivier Vernon. So I just think that this could be a disaster, because now what you have is Daniel Jones overdrafted because he should have been in the teens, not at six, coming out there going against a blitzing team from Todd Bowles. You got to be kidding. This is horrible.
How about Pittsburgh? You were there and you saw what happened with Roethlisberger. You were on that sideline. I mean, that is a big turn, too. Are you optimistic for them at all with Mason Rudolph?
I'm not optimistic. I think they have a chance. And you can see what they did. They took the tack that I have, that if the only four real playoff teams right now, just right now, are New England, Kansas City, the Chargers, and the Ravens, then they've taken the tack that's like, okay, let's see if we can get the defense better. You know, they took Devin Bush, and they got him, you know, as a first-round pick who's going to be really good. And now you pick up Minka Fitzpatrick, who's a possible Pro Bowl-caliber safety. Now you have nine number ones on your defense. So if you can get that all coming together, then you have a chance to, you know, maybe eke out a wild card. So I think that's what their thinking is, and it's an interesting thought because, you know, Rudolph did a good job. I mean, let's put it this way. If you look at his numbers compared to Ben Roethlisberger, because I think Ben was clearly showing problems with his elbow during the entire first half. Mm-hmm. He only threw for like 75 yards. Rudolph came in the second half, was able to get about 12 completions and 21 attempts, and he was able to get 112 yards. Well, I mean, there's some hope there. But, I mean, you got James Conner with his knee banged up. He's going to play, but he's going to be hurt. And then, you know, so I think they have a chance, but you can't feel optimistic.
Well, here we go, John. The 2018 draft class, as far as quarterbacks are concerned, are in full swing. Now with Mason Rudolph obviously starting as well. Baker, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen starting. That was announced today. Lamar Jackson, though, has been a bit of a revelation the first 2 weeks. What have you seen from the Ravens and Lamar Jackson? Is it sustainable, or is this something that, you know, defensive coordinators will figure out? Because, you know, he came in last year late, the playoff game. There was some, you know, there was some nice plays, but it looked like he was able to be kind of figured out pretty quickly. What are we looking at here?
Well, what you're looking at is, I mean, you don't want to overdo it because he did it against two of the worst teams in football. I mean, Arizona was the worst team in football last year, and their defense is terrible. And then you look at Miami. I mean, they're biblically bad because, I mean, there's locusts going around those stadiums, how bad they are. And so, you know, you don't want to overdo it. But then the one thing you have to realize, you know, the guy's had eight starts, and he's won seven games. And again, he may be a one-trick pony in the sense he's more a runner than he is a quarterback, but he's got something going right. But, you know, things will start to catch up to him. But, you know, right now I think you have to start giving him the benefit of the doubt.
There are throws he's making that are unbelievably good. I mean, there are clips from both games where, whether it's the Dolphins, I like biblically bad a lot, by the way.
I like that as well.
Use that again. Mm-hmm. But I'll source you. Errors doesn't matter. Like that, there was a seam pass to Andrews that he threw where you see it from high end zone. It's just super good, you know. So who's out in full force right now are the people who are telling you he was able to do this at Louisville. But, you know, he had enough people last year who really wondered. So that's a very interesting story. As somebody that has money on him to win the NFL MVP this year, well, I guess you'll know right there what I'm rooting for. John, how about
– you know what the scary
– Yes?
I was going to tell you, what the scary part about this weekend is, and this week three? This is the youngest quarterback group that's going to start since 1987, because now what you're looking at, Rosen's going to be the 17th quarterback who's starting this week who's 26 or younger. 17, okay? But here's where the problem is. 1987, that was the strike year. I mean, that was replacement players. I mean, you've gone now, 32 years since you've had quarterbacks that are that young? To me, that's scary.
I think it's very exciting. It might be that week three this year is a huge transition moment with Roethlisberger, who's talking about returning next year. And, you know, Breeze will be back, and I don't know about Manning, even Newton, even Luck, you know, went out like he did before the season.
Roethlisberger's, you know, we don't know where his career is going to be. But yet, John, here is Tom Brady still watching all of these young kids who are basically almost his age go out. I mean, it's just amazing. It's incredible watching him do what he's doing when everything seems to be turning over, and yet he's out there playing at his age at the level he's playing at.
Well, the two incredible things is now I've got to take a look, but literally if you put probably Kyler Murray and one of these other rookie quarterbacks and combine the two ages, you know, they may get one or two past Brady. Okay, that's scary. Because, again, it's like, okay, you got a 21 and maybe a 23, so you have combined ages of 44. All right, that's unbelievable. The other thing that's unbelievable is now that they got Antonio Brown, you know, here's a team that's always adjusting, always doing different things. You know, they used a lot of, one back, four receiver formations. Now, again, you know they want to be a two-back running team. That's their mission. But now they're trying to almost do some things that they're doing in Arizona with the air raid. And so that's going to be a little bit different. I think they had like about 10 or 11, 10 sets is what they call them because it's one and a zero tight end. You can understand the zero tight end because Rob Gronkowski's retired. But it's like, wow, that's so different.
You know, what they'll do, and this is, I mean, maybe even too simplistic, but what they'll do is be able to go through almost their entire regular season and show nothing of the sort what they want to be in the playoffs. I mean, whatever.
100%.
This is like the preseason for New England, you know? The preseason teams say, like, well, they don't want to show what they're really going to be about. I mean, the Patriots can go through regular seasons like that, including maybe this one again.
Yeah, they become a chameleon throughout every week, and basically once they get to a Halloween and then Thanksgiving – they really kind of become what they're going to be, it seems like. John, we'd like to ask you about the Miami Dolphins and what they're doing right now. And there's been a lot of criticism against them, and especially Ryan Clark came out and really kind of hammered them for, you know, being unethical and not giving their players a chance to be put in a good spot, even as far as safety is concerned, for what they're doing. But there's another side that says, look, I mean, this is what you need to do if you really want to stay out of the mediocrity that they've been in. So where do you fall on exactly what Miami is doing right now?
I agree with Ryan Clark 100%. I think it's an abomination what they're doing, and it's stupid. This thing is going to go like the Cleveland Browns, if not worse. And here's why. I mean, you know the five main positions, and five of the hardest positions to be able to get. Okay, they're quarterback. Okay, they're drafting one next year, so we'll give them credit for that. They'll get the first pick in the draft and their pick of the quarterbacks in a good quarterback draft. You know, left tackle. How tough is that to get nowadays? Because normally, if the best left tackle is going to be in the top 10 of the draft, and all these choices are not going to be in the top 10. Then you've got your pass rusher. You know, then you've got your cornerback and your wide receiver. Well, guess what? They got rid of all of them. I mean, sure, they have Xavien Howard. I was just counting up. I don't know if they made a transaction today. In fact, I think they did. So, but
they claim
today,
Taco Charlton
they
off
have
waivers.
14 new players. Okay, yeah, so they've now got 15 new players since the last cut on August 31st. 17 new15 new players. So that means they came out of camp with only 38 players. And you don't know how these guys are going to be fitting in or anything else. To me, it's a disaster. And they're the ones trading them all away. They'll get the draft choices, but it's almost like Oakland. You're not going to be able to get the equal of some of the players, the top players that you've traded away.
Biblically bad, maybe they should do this in twos. John, how about Jalen Ramsey?
So too. Yeah.
Do you think Jalen Ramsey gets traded? Maybe even by tomorrow?
I do, yeah.
I do too.
No, Friday, yeah, because after the game, I think that Kansas City or Philadelphia is going to step up and get something done. Now, not for two first-round picks. I just don't see that. I do think that something's going to happen because he's too good of a player, and this is an opportunity that you can't turn down if you're going to be going all in. And if you're Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes, you're all in. If you're Philadelphia with Carson Wentz, you're all in. So, no, I think one of those two teams is going to end up with him.
And New Orleans, you have the New Orleans sideline this week for Saints Seahawks, and it's now Teddy Bridgewater there. What's your outlook now on the Saints with Breeze out?
I still think they can make the playoffs. I mean, you know, what ends up happening is that the division still might be a little bit easier. I mean, they've gone, because again, I thought they were the number one seed. And I still think that, you know, their move to get Teddy Bridgewater is something close to what the Eagles did when they get Nick Foles. So I think they can survive, and I think he can be a 500 quarterback. So if they can get through six games and be 4-4, I still think they can come back and salvage a 9-10 win season with Drew Brees. So I'm not writing them off, and I still think they can be difficult because, again, there's so much talent on that team. You know, I had them actually beating the Patriots in the Super Bowl. So what this means, and of course, this is, I mean, they're not going to make the Super Bowl this year. But what's going to end up happening is that I still think they can win division, get a wild card, get into the playoffs, and maybe win a game or two. But they're going to, if they make the playoffs, they're not going to be a number one seed. They're not going to be a number two seed. They're going to be a number three or a number four. And that means you have to win three road games to get to the Super Bowl, and that probably won't happen.
All right. John, nice to talk to you. We'll do this again next week, of course.
Thank you.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
In the NFL from just about an hour ago, Ian Rappaport reports that the Miami Dolphins will start Josh Rosen at quarterback this Sunday against the Cowboys, benching Ryan Fitzpatrick. The Dolphins traded a second-round pick for Rosen back at the NFL draft. Sticking with football, Panthers quarterback Cam Newton was seen in a walking boot today, and he did not practice. Ian Rappaport reports that Newton is trending towards not playing this week against Arizona. And the Chiefs have injuries at running back. Starter Damian Williams did not practice with a knee injury today, although former Bill LeSean McCoy did return to practice. He's been dealing with an ankle issue. And in hockey, not great news for the Sabres today. Defenseman Brandon Montour has a hand injury that'll keep him out for the rest of the preseason, putting his status for the season opener in serious question. The Sabres are at the Leafs tomorrow night. Ralph Kruger says that Marcus Johansson and Rasmus Ristolainen will see their first action of the preseason this weekend. For WGR, I'm Jody Biasi. Go to WGR550.com to get in on a chance to win a Thursday night football viewing party for you and 10 of your friends at Fat Bob's Smokehouse. It includes two drink tickets, an appetizer buffet, and other great prizes. Fat Bob's Smokehouse, delicious barbecue, award-winning mac and cheese, and 22 beers on tap, 41 Virginia Place in Buffalo.
Welcome back. Mike Shope with Sal Capaccio today. Bulldog is off until Sunday. He'll rejoin me for Bills-Bengals. We're at Tops on McKinley out by the stadium today, technically Hamburg. And they tell us, by the way, that tomorrow is National Pepperoni Pizza Day.
Wow.
Tops is giving away a pizza party. You can enter on Tops' Facebook page. To enter, you just need to like the post announcing the giveaway and then comment why your school or office deserves a pizza party. The winner gets a $150 Topps gift card to purchase sheet pizzas, pop, napkins, cups, plates, and anything else you need for your pizza party. Sal and I, just a couple of pros here, eating pizza just in exactly the amount of time the update takes. I've been doing this a long time. We welcome Evan Abrams from the Action Network to talk about Week 3, which kicks off tonight with Tennessee at Jacksonville. Hi, Evan. Nice to have you on again.
Yeah, it's great to be here. You got to share some of that pepperoni pizza with me.
Hey, I mean, you got to get here soon. I don't know how close you are, but we'd certainly be willing. So the theme, I think, maybe for week three is to have two 20-point lines or thereabouts. That's very unusual. What is the better supposed to do with that? Like, what do you know about teams in situations like these two games?
So first of all, thanks for having me on again. The thing that's so crazy about this week three, you said it, was we got over 17-point favorites in two games for the first time really since the strike shortened year in 87. We haven't seen something like this in decades. So from a betting point of view, I mean, what you're supposed to do with this game is you're supposed to A, not watch, but B, usually these teams don't cover. I mean, teams of this nature who are this big of favorites are 0-7 against the spread, 0-6 against the spread when you're above 20 points. they just don't do a good job. And to be honest, it's usually New England in this spot, as they've done it a bunch of times, except for Manning and the Broncos back in 2013. So, you know, and we're up to 22.5 with Dallas and Miami, up at, from 21.5 earlier.
22.5. Would you predict line movement in either game, one way or the other, here in the next couple days, or no?
I mean, to be honest with you, I think it will probably go up. Both New England and Dallas are receiving 77% of the tickets right now. And when you look at the money, it's 77% for New England and 88% for Dallas. So as we get closer to kickoff, I really don't see a reason why the line wouldn't go up, because I don't even think the professionals are going to want to take those bad teams even over key numbers. I mean, if it got to, say, 24, then you all of a sudden get to another key number, but 22, 23, I mean, you just, these teams are atrocious. So even when you get to those numbers, I just don't see it being attractive for professionals.
Right, they can't make the numbers big enough.
What has happened? What's been the trend so far through 2 weeks as far as favorites, underdogs? I'm always interested in early season and bettors trying to get a read on everything. What's been the trend so far through 2 weeks?
I mean, the stat that really blows me away, guys, is through the first 2 weeks of the regular season, favorites of a touchdown or higher are 8-0 straight up. So we haven't seen that since 2011. That's the first time that they've been undefeated through 2 weeks. And again, this week, guys, we've got 9 spreads of 6 or more. It's been a long time, other than a week 17, since we've seen that too. So, I mean, this week is a special, special thing. And I think from a market point of view, this is a trend that will continue throughout the season. We even saw it in baseball last night. Gerrit Cole was -500. Like, across all of sports, with the legalization of sports betting, we're seeing these favorites just skyrocket through the roof.
Right. And Houston had that one loss, and we all stopped and gawked at that, but they've had some big spreads in their favor, like last night, as you mentioned. Evan Abrams from the Action Network. Well, let's talk Cincinnati-Buffalo. Evan, the Bills with 2 road wins, a favorite last week at the Giants, and they easily covered that. What do you think here with them -6?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is a real fascinating game from a Buffalo standpoint, just because they are favored by 6. They've been favored by 6 or more in the first 3 weeks of the regular season. This is just the second time in the last decade. So, I mean, these are expectations. These are expectations that Buffalo usually doesn't see. And they're seeing a Cincinnati team that has really, really struggled. But one thing that I'm looking at in this game is I think the under 44 is a good play. It's up from 40.5. The under's 9-4 under Josh Allen. And when you look at the Bengals without A.J. Green have done a really, really bad job at scoring points. 14, 21, 20, 10, 21, 30, 18, 13, 20, and 17. Those are the point totals without A.J. Green for the Bengals. So they just don't do a good job. And against the Bills defense, who's been good, I think that's probably the smart play here, guys.
I'm trying to think of what the other game is. Evan, I wouldn't expect you to know. Second time in a decade, first 3 weeks, Bills favored by 6 or more.
Yep.
Hold on.
I got it.
I would say maybe, wait, first 3 weeks, maybe Oakland here in 2011?
So it's going to be funny. Week 1, 2018, against the Jets, you were 7-point favorites.
Wow. The Jets were
17.
2017.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. I wrote down 18 here. It might have been 17.
Yep.
But I have two that.
Yeah, that was Sean McDermott's debut as head coach.
Josh McCown.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. They did cover
that. It doesn't happen often. And in this spot, and the thing that's really funny is people are taking the Bills. You've got 60% of tickets right now on Buffalo. And people aren't liking what they're seeing with Cincinnati.
Interesting. With Evan Abrams. One game I'm curious about is Carolina-Arizona, because of the pace that really both of those teams are operating at so far. And I know Carolina is going away from Cam Newton, who's hurt, but I kind of want to think that maybe that could be a high-scoring game, and I think the total is low 40s, if I'm not mistaken, Evan.
Yeah, right now you've got 44, and it was 46.5, Carolina -2.5 when it opened, when people were assuming Cam would play, and even injured Cam. You've now got Arizona -2.5, and the totals dropped about 2 points. To me, the most fascinating thing about this Cardinals team is just their pace and the way they're playing. They're second in pace overall. They're first in pace in the first half. They're third in pace in the second half. And the stat that really blows me away is they're just no huddling, much higher than any other team. It's 54% through 2 weeks, the second highest of the Falcons at 18. So what they're doing is they're speeding up. They're having more plays, and they're also putting more wide receivers on the field. Number of snaps played with four or more wide receivers on the field, the Cardinals have 91. The other 31 teams have 60 combined. So Arizona right now with Kingsbury is just playing a completely different game.
But it hasn't exactly yet led to big scores, because you want to think that would be
– Yeah.
Go ahead.
You know, the way I'm looking at it is, I think where the opportunity comes in, if he keeps up the pace and he keeps up this style of play and Arizona, say, doesn't win games, I think they're going to get inflated lines and you're going to see backdoor covers from Arizona. I think that's where you're going to see the bat. You saw it with Baltimore. They're going to stay in games because I think they're going to have more opportunities to score late.
That makes sense. I think they got to the over in that Detroit game, but only – maybe they needed overtime to do it. They were not scoring until really the fourth quarter of that game. So, okay, and then
Baltimore game. Yeah, they were down 24-6 and made the comeback. Yeah, huge comeback. So
right.
That's what I'm seeing. That's what I'm seeing with Arizona. They're going to be one of the most fascinating teams to keep track of.
What about tonight's game? Tennessee, Jacksonville, what are we looking at tonight for anybody who wants to get some action?
Sure, for Tennessee and Jacksonville tonight, I mean, this game is absolutely atrocious. I'm not really sure how, without betting and fantasy, I'm not really sure how anybody watches this game. But if you're going to watch it, I think the angle here is a prop. And I really do like Derrick Henry to score a touchdown in this game. It's about even. It's about -105 at some books. The last time he played the Jaguars, 17 rushes, 238 yards, and 4 touchdowns. But the stats that I'm really liking is he's got all 6 red zone rushes for Tennessee this season. And he's also done a really, really good job at DFS when they're a favorite versus an underdog under Vrabel. 10 more points on average when he's a favorite versus an underdog. He tends to give him the ball, give him the rock, and he does the job. So I think if the Titans are going to do well tonight, and the bettors and the money seem to think that way, Derrick Henry's going to have to get the job done.
If you're ready for this, take it. One receiver from either team tonight, most yards. Who would you pick? I'll tell you mine. If you've got one, go ahead.
Sure,
I'll tell you
please.
Mine.
No. What do you think? What do you think?
Chark. Chark for me.
I think Corey Davis is an under-the-radar guy to keep track of in Tennessee. I think Tennessee is an interesting play in the game. So I think there's a chance. Listen, Marcus Mariota is someone that can't be trusted on either side, right? He's 9-19-1 against the spread off a win, 14-10-1 against the spread off a loss. So the guy he's one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL off wins. So this is kind of the right spot for him, and it was not the right spot for him last week. So that's where I'm looking.
All right.
I'd like to ask you, Evan, about the change in Pittsburgh at quarterback and what that does to the line, and also long-term for the Steelers.
Excuse me.
As far as numbers on games, or even over-unders for their win total, how does that impact the Steelers going forward as far as bettors?
Sure. So, I mean, right now you actually have a very interesting market with that Pittsburgh-San Francisco game. 56% of the tickets on San Francisco at 6.5, but you got 60% of the money on Pittsburgh. So right now the public on San Francisco, the professionals looking at Pittsburgh, and I think when you look long-term at Pittsburgh, you're going to have to look at their defense. By adding Minka Fitzpatrick, and I think the way they're going to look going forward with Rudolph, they could turn into an under team. So I think that's something you might want to look at when they change their style of play.
That makes sense. All right. Evan, this is good stuff. Thanks again. We'll talk next week.
Looking forward to it.
Evan
Thank
Abrams,
you.
Radio.com Sports Insider. Insider's Reports brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at indeed.com/hire. Do you have an answer on the receivers tonight? I don't have the props in front of me, but
Chark. I was going to go with Corey Davis as well. I thought about A.J. Brown, but I don't know. Maybe that week one might have just been a kind of a one-off. I'm not really sure.
You should be able to count to include Delanie Walker, but for yardage, Chark might be nice. You know, you get a new quarterback, and it's almost like all bets are off with which receivers will be. I mean, if you have like a Julio Jones, not that he has a new quarterback ever, but a guy like that, take the Steelers, right? Juju Smith-Schuster, all summer. Oh, well, Antonio Brown is gone, but all these targets last year, and there's no reason to think he won't be number one. That's all fine. That's all still in play. But then you get Rudolph, who went to college with James Washington.
Right.
And like maybe it's James Washington, right?
That's right.
So when you get a quarterback change like the Jaguars have had, everybody loved Dede Westbrook this summer in Jacksonville. And then Foles gets hurt first game. Now, like, DJ Chark is the one putting some stats up. And Westbrook, I mean, last week, maybe Joe knows, like 1 for 3 or some kind of stat line like that for him.
I don't think Gardner Minshew has anybody that played college football with him on his roster.
That would be.
Do you know where that is?
Washington State. Wasn't he with.
No.
Falk at
Washington State? Right. I'm sorry. Yes. He finished at Washington State, correct.
Before he was at the Colorado
School. He was
at
East Carolina, actually.
Oh, East Carolina.
But
David
Garrard. Yes, Washington State. But, yeah, I don't think he has anybody there.
David Garrard, that's East right. Carolina. I always think of that one Syracuse
Jeff
game.
Jeff Blake.
I was on the sideline. Jeff Blake. That's right.
Wait. I think Blake is the one that had the busted play against Syracuse.
I don't know about a busted play, but in 2000, I was on the Syracuse network on the field at East Carolina, and Garrard was the quarterback.
Okay, well, I'm going back to like 92 or 3, and Jeff Blake had like a busted play to beat Syracuse, I believe, on like a fourth down.
I like Jeff Blake.
Yeah.
Bengals. Bills and Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of history, Bills and Bengals. We will talk some more here, Sal and I from Tops on McKinley, and then Chris Liss of RotoWire coming up in about 15 minutes, live from Portugal. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back. This is WGR.
It's another defense that's really sound in what they do. They understand exactly how to play this defense. They know what they want to be, and they know just how to play it really well. I mean, they've got guys that have been in that system for a little while now, so they understand it. And so I think if you just one thing you, when you put on the tape is there's sound everywhere.
Andy Dalton coming back to Buffalo. He was here in the preseason last year and fans saluted him. It's also funny, like Dalton's place in Bills history, just like a random player on another team. But yeah. It happened, and the Bengals are on tap for Sunday. Our guest just now, Evan Abrams, talking like he likes the under in this game. The Bengals are getting big plays on offense, but he rattled off their point totals without A.J. Green. That's to be considered, and they're not running it at all. So the Bills in the secondary, real quick, Sal, like Trey White is okay, it seems, and Johnson is still hurt.
Yeah, Trey White should be on track to play. It's sounding like, you know, they're just taking precautionary measures at this point, but we'll see. And Taron Johnson, even though he's almost definitely not going to play after missing another day of practice, I really like what they did with their game plan last week with Saran Neal and Dean Marlowe. And, you know, that Tyler Eifert is not Evan Engram, but he's a good player. He actually missed practice yesterday, and I think he was limited today. I have to check on that. But they don't have to do what they did against Engram, but I do think Saran Neal can just handle that role pretty well, actually, against Tyler Eifert.
And the Bills on offense here, we'll talk more about this tomorrow on the roundtable. You like what you see so far?
I do.
Singletary, maybe?
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, are they going to take a page out of the 49ers playbook and just try to pound them? And, you know, because the 49ers got big chunks on the ground. I rewatched that game, and they were just – misdirection is Joe is right.
I love that guy. You know, betting on San Francisco this year was betting on Shanahan.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't betting on – you could do it. You could bet on Garoppolo. It wasn't that way for me. It was betting on Shanahan. And, you know, they have different running backs producing, but it's not the guys it was supposed to be.
Right.
Like Coleman is out. McKinnon is out again for the year. So this is what – like to the running backs don't matter encyclopedia. Throw the 49ers in there. You know, it like kind of looks right now like it doesn't matter a lot who the guy is.
That's right.
But they're doing great.
How about the Chargers? Eckler is a huge producer. Without Gordon, they don't need Gordon.
Yeah, what is Gordon's play?
Right.
Gordon is kind of – he's out there raising his hand every couple of days, you know, like I'm here. Mm-hmm. And then you'll get the obligatory national reporter update that, oh, he's planning on coming back or he's serious, like different things that mean nothing. But sounds like he comes back in time to get his – term of service or whatever it is, his contract, you know, to count for the year.
Right.
But by then, if it's not soon, I wonder what the Chargers, you know, get out of him or want from him, depending on what kind of season they're having. I mean, could be a couple months still before, or at least, you know, Halloween.
I think the Bills' defensive line could really feast on these banged up Cincinnati offensive linemen and offensive line. You know, we'll talk more about it tomorrow, but I think this is a spot for them to really kind of get after it a little bit.
Yeah, and that's just been an okay area for them so far, right. Would you say?
Yeah, and they're not getting the numbers, but I did read an interesting stat, or I was told an interesting stat, that the quarterbacks through the first 2 weeks the Bills have faced are having to get rid of the ball a lot quicker than last year. Last year was 2.8 seconds, this year is 2.6 seconds, which is a pretty big difference. So even though they're not getting the numbers, they're forcing the quarterback to have to make quicker decisions and get rid of the ball quicker.
Thanks for being here today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Sal's taking off. We will have more Bills-Bengals next hour. And also after the update, Chris Liss from RotoWire. Mike Shope with Sal Capaccio. This is WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.